Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to the Hollywood Boulevard podcast, hosted by Jonathan Moody and Donnie Sturgis.
Hey, hey guys, this is Donnie Sturgis, and with me is Jonathan Moody and Alfred Crane, our producer. And tonight's show, we're going to be talking about Doctor Who. A lot of stuff to talk about in a 45-minute show. So. Over 50 years of content, so we won't be able to cover everything, but we'll try to cover as much as possible. So just want to go ahead and say hello, Jonathan, and hello, Alfred.
Hello.
Hey, what's up?
Greetings from Gallifrey.
yeah, that's exactly right. So I guess anybody who's listening, if you know Doctor Who, I'll give you a quick, or if you don't know Doctor Who, I'll give you a quick setup. It's a show that came out in the late 60s, and or was it the early 60s? Man, I'm already screwing
63.
It up. 63, thank you. For some reason I was thinking 69, but I was like, wait, I think that's Star Trek. But anyway, 1963, the BBC came up with a new sci-fi show called Doctor Who, which was basically supposed to be an educational program originally for children, about an old man in a time traveling police box who went around and went through different historical periods and also did other things to kind of teach kids about science and stuff, and it's come a long way. It's been over 50 years and still going strong, even though I had a bit of a hiatus. So the first thing I want to talk about is the legacy of Doctor Who. I mean, this is a show that has endured. One of the longest TV shows that's ever been around. It's endured cancellation. It's endured a mediocre TV movie that was a child of Fox and BBC, and it still managed to continue. And it's, you know, we've got our first female doctor coming up. So, what thoughts would you like to throw in there about the legacy of Doctor Who, Alfred?
Well, I would like to say my first Doctor Who experience was in upstate New York on watching on PBS and in Rome, Doctor Who would come on in the afternoons for a half hour serial. And I was like, what the heck is this? And then I slowly got sucked into it. And I think for me, it's really had an impact, because when I first started watching it, I didn't realize it was like three doctors ahead of the fourth. I didn't realize Tom Baker was number four. And then I remember when we moved to Virginia, I didn't have Doctor Who here, so it was like, you know, craving Doctor Who. I was like an alcoholic without a fix. I was like, I want more Doctor Who. And then I had my friend Gary Smith. He was recording him for me when he was living in Northern Virginia. And I was like, wow, he's like, they got a whole bunch of doctors. So I would say the legacy of Doctor Who is like, it's creative. I mean, sometimes the stories are, the early ones are a little cheap, but the stories are usually pretty solid. The effects aren't.
Yes.
But I would say to have a following that a little bit of history, when it first came out, they didn't think it would be popular. So the BBC World Service, they would just record over the video recording.
Yep.
So there are a lot of missing episodes because
there are.
I think the most recent ones they found were the Web of Fear and one other one in Kenya. And they found the in a BBC station vault or something. So they're still popping up. Hopefully we'll get a complete video library one of these days. But for something to be that, where they're still looking for old episodes and there's a craving for a show like this, which, like you said, survived two long gaps. It's had some, you know, great doctors, some goofy doctors, and even a Rowan Atkinson Doctor Who fundraiser special.
Curse of the Failed Death.
Jonathan Price. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, it's that's a which at one point in time, I believe, was almost considered canon until the new stuff came out.
Right.
Because a lot of that special, because they used to do the specials like that all the time in the old days, like the every time they did like the Children in Need or the Red Nose special, because they did one where they did a great crossover with EastEnders, which is a soap opera. Yes, yes. It came out in the mid to late 80s. Because it actually included almost all the doctors, actually, because even Baker participated this time, although he kind of just sat in a booth and just kind of spoke in a microphone. But you got to see like the doctor's granddaughter again. You got to see like a bunch of different people popped up in it, and it was a crossover with EastEnders, which is like a soap opera from BBC. I've only seen it once, so I don't remember much about it, but I remember just like it was just a weird concept. But yeah, you're absolutely right with the way the legacy is gone, and hopefully, like you said, they will find those missing tapes because they're always finding them all over the place, in the weirdest places, like you said, like in Kenya and stuff. Like somebody has like a collection of like season or from like Doctor Number Two that they just have sitting around. But I mean that's the other interesting thing about I forgot where I was going with that.
While you're trying to catch up, one thing, the for it to impact pop culture, I mean, there's reference to it in The Simpsons with the comic book guy going, this wheelbarrow burrito should be adequate sustenance for the Doctor Who marathon, and I think it's been in Family Guy and Futurama.
Yep.
But.
Oh yeah, it's been it's permeated into pop culture all over the place. Like that is the enduring legacy of the show. Okay, I need to switch over to Jonathan because we're leaving him out here. Your input.
I am okay with you leaving me out. I'm just listening. I'm still not a huge Doctor Who fan. I know that like all you Whovians out there are gonna lynch me or something, but I'm not a sci-fi guy. I think we've discussed this on the show before or something, you know.
Oh yeah, we have.
Sci-fi was just not my forte. When I grew up, I was really into comedy and a little bit of horror, but I was never the sci-fi stuff. Like Terminator 2 is probably the closest to sci-fi, you know, I'll get, or Donnie Darko, you know, those kind of things. But I never really liked Star Trek. I got into Star Wars later in life, you know, and Doctor Who, I didn't hear about till like a few years ago. I think probably like John Johnson said something about it or something. And I was like, what is that? And I was just like, I have no idea what you guys are talking about. I didn't know what, I didn't know what a TARDIS was. You know, I thought people were saying some kind of new word for retard. I don't know. It just it just didn't sound like, I just didn't understand any of this stuff. And then I think it was like, I had heard all those things, but didn't really like put two and two together. And then I went to, I think it was RavenCon last year. And I started, and I saw they have the TARDIS. You know, and everything.
And they also have Daleks there as well.
Oh yeah, so you know, I'm so like, I don't know much of these things, so I'm just like, okay, that's kind of. I was like, because I looked at it, I was like, why do they have a big phone booth, and you know, inside a convention, like it didn't, or it was, like, well, it was a police box, you know, whatever. I didn't even know what any of that was, and then. I looked at Doctor Who a little bit on Amazon before, and then I knew we were going to do the show, so I wanted to do a little bit of research, which I wasn't able to do a lot. I wasn't able to do much at all, in fact.
There's a lot to cover.
There is, and I mean, it is. I guess what's interesting is like the old Doctor Who, which we'll talk about probably in a little bit, because the classic Doctor Who has more of the was like a serial length, so it was like 25 minutes long or whatever, and shorter, much shorter. And now like the newer one is more like the TV shows of today, and stuff, and it's more 40 minutes long and stuff like that. So I think that's kind of cool. But I was like, when Alfred let me borrow the old Doctor Who, I was like, oh my God, there's a lot of like stuff to like go through.
Oh, yeah.
I opted to not go into it because I just felt like I couldn't, you know, if I started, I wouldn't be able to get near enough to really get into it. So
sure.
I'm more into like listening to you guys talk about it because you guys apparently know a lot more about, about this than way more than I do. So you
well,
guys
the interesting
go ahead.
The interesting thing about that is having an outsider's perspective still kind of gives you a little bit to say about it because you can kind of look at it from, hey, this is something new that I just experienced, and so what is this and this and this? So, I mean, it's kind of cool to have you here to do, you know, to have that perspective, you know, as opposed to Alfred and I who, you know, kind of grew up with it. Because I'm like Alfred. I grew up watching it on PBS in the late 70s, early 80s. And I like one of the episodes I remember most was like the one that really got to me was it was talking about like alternate dimensions. Cause that was the thing. Like the show had some really amazing like concepts and it really broke ground on some on creative ideas and stuff. Like that was the first time I ever heard about the idea. Like there's a parallel universe where the same people, but they're different, like, and everything like that. And, yeah, like you mentioned, Alfred, the only doctor that they really showed at the time was the fourth doctor, Tom Baker. So for the longest time, I thought that's the only doctor there was. Although I have had friends who have said that they have seen like in the mid 80s on PBS that they did start to show the fifth doctor after a while. I never saw that myself. I only ever saw the fourth doctor. So when I got older and found out like I liked it as a kid, but I didn't really pursue it much beyond just watching on PBS. And then when I got older and found that they were doing a new TV movie that, you know, and everything. And then I would like, they're up to the eighth doctor. I'm like, eighth doctor, what do you mean by that? And so I looked it up and I was like, holy crap, there's all these other doctors. Like, oh my goodness. So I ended up getting, you know, looking into it. And I remember loving the show so much. So I gave the movie a try and then the movie, I was just like, I didn't like this at all. So I kind of wasn't, you know, a big fan of the film, mainly because I didn't really care for Paul McGann, because the only thing I'd ever seen Paul McGann in before that Doctor Who movie was The Three Musketeers by Disney. And he, you know, he had that really loud, high-pitched scream when he would scream D'Artagnan. So I was just like, this guy's goofy. Like, why is he the Doctor? That doesn't make any sense. So so I think we've talked about the legacy enough. I mean, like I said, it's had a huge impact on pop culture. We see it in Simpsons. We see it in other TV shows. We see it in video games. You know, some people will put, like, I think one of the Fallout games, one of the early Fallout games for the PC, had a TARDIS that showed up. And when you got near it, it would disappear. I think it was like Fallout 1 or 2. I don't remember which one. It was one of the early PC ones, but apparently there was a TARDIS in the middle of the, and if you try to walk up to it, it would disappear and make the whirring noise. But it's pretty much it's endured. Yeah, no,
wait,
seriously.
Hold on. I gotta know about this real quick. So, in one of the Fallout games, they do that?
Not the new ones. The early ones for the PC where
right,
it was a three-quarter overhead. There is a place in one. I think it's one of the Fallout games where if you get to a certain point in the wasteland, there's a blue box sitting out in the middle of nowhere, and when you try to approach it, it'll disappear and it'll make the whirring noise.
That is awesome. It's just strange. It's like that reminds me of the the guy on Mortal Kombat that would come in and go whoopsie, you know, like just random little, you know, Easter eggs that they throw into the game.
Oh yeah.
To I don't know to fuck with you, I guess. I don't know what they do. But carry on. I just thought that was really
all right.
Funny.
So. But yeah, so I mean, and you know, we're at the point now where the show is more popular than ever, you know, and you have, you know, your new fans, your old Who fans, you know. So next thing I want to get into is the show's constant reinvention. This is about an article I read on IO9 years and years ago, right around the time that I think the 11th Doctor was getting ready to begin as the new Doctor. it was in 2011, and it's a really cool article. I highly recommend trying to find it if you can. But it talked about how the show reinvented itself so many times over the years. It's always been something different. It's always been a different, like it's had different themes. It's tried to tackle different things. And one of the things that because like at one point, like I said, when it first started, it was an educational program. It was basically the whole point was the BBC wanted to do something sciencey and something kind of adventure-y that would also teach children about science and history and like, you know, the planets and stuff like that. And so that was their initial intention because the whole thing was that, you know, they didn't want to do aliens. They didn't want to do any type of weird creatures and stuff. They were like adamant. They're like, don't do any of that stuff. Just do history and stuff like that. Well, of course, they ended up breaking that rule down the road, you know, when they first introduced the Daleks stuff.
Was this like, you know, Mr. Wizard kind of thing? Like, was it going to be like Dr. Wizard?
Kind of. I'd say it's more like what's that cartoon? Peabody and Mr. Sherman, Mr. Peabody
nice.
And Sherman. Sorry, it's kind of. In fact, I think Peabody and Mr. Sherman, I think, is kind of a nod to Doctor Who in a lot of ways, because the whole point was it was a fictional program, obviously, you know. But with this older gentleman, you know, basically this fatherly figure that the kids could look up to, traveling throughout the cosmos, you know, going to different historical eras, and that's how the kids learned. Was, you know, it was a show that disguised itself as an adventure program, but it would teach you things as you went along. I, you know, would teach you about, oh, you know, Mars does this, and you never know, oh, look, here comes a caveman, you know. And that was originally what the show intended to be, but then over, you know, it evolved, you know, several times, and it continues to evolve. And then, of course, later it became, you know, like it got into gothic horror at one point. The Fourth Doctor adventures were all about gothic horror. It basically, you know, it became a show about monsters. It became, during the Third Doctor's era, it became more of a James Bond kind of show. Because every era of Doctor that showed up, they tried to tailor it more to whatever was popular at the time. They tried to make it more Star Wars-y at one point. They tried to make it more James Bondish at one point. They tried to make it more like the original Avengers. Not the Marvel guys, but the British show. Like I said, they did gothic horror. They would do slapstick comedy. It's amazing how malleable and evolving the show constantly was.
I have to ask quickly, and one of you guys will probably know this. So you're saying that it constantly evolved, but does that mean that like did it evolve through the seasons, or did like each season have a different tone and a different feel to it?
Well, I think
yes
back
and yes.
Then, when they were first doing the show, they were more doing adventures, like a four-part adventure. There's no real arching storyline, and then they would when you had the concept of regeneration of the Doctor came up when William Hartnell couldn't do it anymore,
right?
And like, how do we keep the show going? And then someone came up with the idea of regenerating, and that. But I do like how each Doctor, and I think when a new Doctor came in, it would have a new feel to it. Because I mean,
yes, it would.
William Hartnell was the crusty old man, and then Patrick Troughton was kind of like, he looked like Mo from the Three Stooges, and he was really goofy.
Yeah.
And then John Pertwee was kind of like an eccentric, you know, Venusian Aikido wielding gentleman.
He was,
you know,
yeah. He was the James Bond, good, like suave, debonair kind of spy kind of guy.
Yes.
And then
you had UNIT, and you introduced UNIT, I think, was introduced in the Second Doctor, but they really got their, became a part of canon and under the Third Doctor. And I really enjoyed that.
Sure.
And they introduced a recurring villain, the Master, and then I liked how when it keeps reinventing itself. I remember when Christopher Eccleston came on board, because I was a little gun shy from the Paul McGann movie.
Right.
I was like, well,
right.
We'll
so
see.
Was I.
And then I heard they weren't going to do anything with, I mean, Russell T. Davies was pretty brilliant, because he kept saying, we're not going to do anything related to the first series. It's all going to be new. First thing he does, he brings out the Autons, which were introduced
yep.
to John Pertwee. I'm like, this is really good. And Christopher Eccleston, I really enjoyed him. And then they said, well, we're not going to have Daleks. They had Daleks. And they had a crap load of Daleks at the end of it. And then they kept bringing in old stuff and bringing in new stuff. They're going to do Torchwood and Jack Harkness, which I wish they would do more with that, but that's another blog talk. But with the regenerations, I think you get a new flavor each time, and you get new companions.
So, it's true.
You know, they go from the screaming teen to, you know, really highly functional.
That was
know, people
and that's
who are
true.
Like,
the
Hold on, real quick. I wanna ask a question because I know like Billy Piper who played Rose and the ones with Christopher Eccleston when Chris left, you know, they regenerated a new doctor, which was it Matt Smith or David Tennant next?
David Tennant.
One of them. Yeah, David Tennant. She went, you know, she continued on the show. Was she the companion, or was she just a part of the show after?
She was still the companion.
Yeah.
Okay, but you said each time there's a new companion, right?
Well,
no, there is,
but it's. Here's the way it works. There's overlap. There's even in the early days throughout the entire show. There's overlap. Doctors come and go. Companions come and go. They don't always come and go at the same time. You will sometimes have companions. Kind of stick around for a little bit longer. Like the popular one is Sarah Jane Smith, who is one of the most popular companions. She started off with the third Doctor, but stuck around for the fourth Doctor and then left like partway through the fourth Doctor's adventures. It's not uncommon for companions to stick around for longer than their Doctor but you know, you never really see any companions stick around for too long. That's just the nature of the show, but I think Alfred was just kind of simplifying it a little bit to try to make the point that you know, that the way the show's tone and direction changed, and he's right. There are some exceptions though, because I mean, most of the times when the show would reinvent itself, it was usually around the time that the Doctor would change, because you'd get some new writers in, you'd get a new actor in, so you had to give him a new personality. But that wasn't always the case. There are two specific instances. I know the fourth Doctor. His style of series kind of changed once Sarah Jane Smith left, and the other Time Lord, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, it became a little bit
Romana.
Different. Romana. It started to become a little more serious and not as bohemian, because the fourth Doctor Tom Baker was considered like a bohemian type, you know, very eclectic and stuff. The other time that the tone of the show changed midway into the show was the seventh Doctor, because when the seventh Doctor first started, he was more aloof and more of a goofy kind of grandfatherly type. And then partway through his series, the show got darker and he started to become more of a darker kind of, he would start doing things toward his enemies that were like, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. That's like, you know, but he would always have that. So there were a lot of things that depended on it. It depended on budget. It depended on, you know, doctors leaving. And sometimes, and also depended on the era. Like I said, when James Bond was really big, the show went to a James Bond bent. When Star Wars was really big, the show wanted to be more like Star Wars. So there's a lot of different factors that that were in effect in how the show was run. Even nowadays, it's the same thing. Like they you know, they take a lot of cues from, you know, what's big now and stuff. And, you know, a lot of even like politics and stuff will kind of, you know, enter into it sometimes as well. So now that we've gone through that, the reinvention stuff, I want to go back a little bit and kind of talk about the classic era and some of the big significant things that were that made the classic era what it was. We've already touched upon some of them. Alfred, you mentioned the whole, you know, the fact that the regeneration was first introduced at the end of Hartnell's era because they wanted to keep the show going, and Hartnell just couldn't because due to health issues. The classic era was really the one that really cemented the show into the minds of – it became a staple to the point where – it was like event TV, like when Doctor Who came on the air, everybody like got in front of their TVs on BBC One or whatever channel it aired on, and it was like a family event. Like kids, like families would sit and watch, because it's a very family friendly show. It's the interesting thing about BBC And actually, the interesting thing about countries other than us in general is their quote-unquote children's programming doesn't talk down to the children. You, an adult, can enjoy it just as much as a child can, whereas in America, we, our children's programming tends to kind of talk down to our kids a little bit more. So, you know, a show that was mainly for kids really had some overall, like, just family appeal. Everybody loved it. So what are some other things, Alfred? I'm not asking because I don't know, but I'm just trying to get you back in the conversation here. Yeah. Some other things from the classic era that were, you know, that the show created or invented. You know, some things that just kind of put it on the map and made it unique.
Yeah. Before I get to that, I just want to let our audience know at 7 o'clock the live feed goes off. But please join us for the follow-on 15 afterwards. Go back and re-listen to the show. Because some people told us it shut off. So I just wanted to plug that. Just because we stopped doesn't mean the show stopped. So you get 15 more minutes of awesome content after the hour, after the half hour. So stuff that was cool about the show, that, could you reframe that again, John or Donnie?
Oh, yeah. I was just saying, you know, because we're talking, you know, we're kind of talking about the classic era at this point.
Okay, classic era.
We've already talked about like regeneration, and we've talked about a few, you know, companions and stuff. So I just kind of wanted to touch base on other things that the show kind of created, you know, stuff that you never saw on other shows, you know, just some things that get that really put it on the map as being unique and different from other TV shows of that era.
Daleks and Cybermen.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Daleks became one of the, I mean, there's even a, one of my dad's favorite Christmas shows is Mr. Bean when he's got a Dalek entering the main. And Daleks. And then Daleks were so wild. I mean, me and my mom used to get in hysterics watching them on TV because you could see the guys in bicycles underneath them trying to, you know, bounce around. And we always got in stitches about that. But you introduced, like, really cool characters that kept recurring, like the Master, the Dalek, the Cybermen. You had some really quippy good lines, like Tom Baker had a lot of good ones.
Absolutely.
Harry Sullivan is an imbecile. And then one of my favorites was in Terror of the Zygons. You got the Scottish ambassador asking him, Tom Baker, if he's a party to this nonsense. And he's like, I'm not a party to any kind of nonsense. And there was good dialogue, there was good character building, and I think that just got better as the years went on.
Absolutely.
And there was just a lot of, like towards the end it started to unravel with who is the Doctor, you know, when Sylvester McCoy is the Doctor, it really got into, you know, they had the Battleground one where it's like, are you Merlin? You know, who is he? You know, it's...
Right.
They really got kind of... They really did get kind of in the dark with him, and I really like your assessment of the post-Sarah Jane Smith period was Tom Baker got a little depressed, and then he introduced Leela, and she was, a scantily clad cavewoman is pretty exciting for a teenager.
Yeah, you had to have some of the TNA in there as well.
And then you had K-9, and then you had just – different things. I mean, K-9 and Company was its own spinoff show, and that's what's coming to mind. I mean, they had fan clubs, and they had
absolutely,
and then they had a lot of books.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Like even back then, like when it wasn't really all that commonplace for a TV show to have such a huge following, like Doctor Who really did. Like you said, they had books, comic books. I think they had conventions at that time in Britain. They had all sorts of incredible stuff. The other thing that's like the classic era, like the that I think was important about the classic era is, again, the show didn't have a huge budget, and so the show had to make do with what it had. And so even though you had the cheesy costumes and the cheesy, you know, monsters and stuff, there was a certain charm about them as well. Because even especially as a kid. I've seen a lot of message board posts by people who grew up with Doctor Who and everything. even as a kid, even though those a lot of those costumes were so like just cheap and just like obviously fake looking, the kids got scared. Like it was the show that made kids hide behind the couch, but they hid behind the couch, but they keep watching because they loved it so much. And so that's a huge, that's a huge thing. Like if you can, even with the cheapness of it, and like I said, they were, the budget was really a problem with them for the longest time because they were always trying to find a budget, and the show was always in danger of being canceled because of that. But the fact that, the kids were still affected, a Dalek still scared the crap out of me. Even if you could see the guy mm-hmm. underneath it, the Sontarans and stuff, it's amazing how the show, how the classic stuff manages to endure. Now the only downside is watching with the way, nowadays with the way, TV shows are shot and stuff, the serialized, way it was done back then doesn't quite fly the way it does now. And part of the, another problem with that is too, is attention spans aren't as good. Everything has to be flashy and moving all the time. And so you can, people that watch the new Who now can go back to those old shows and go, man, this is kind of boring, which is unfortunate because back then, atmosphere and setting up tone and doing the slow build was the way to go, especially with low budgets. And so it's commonplace in movies as well as TV shows. But I think go ahead.
I was just going to say like looking back at, I was watching one of the episodes with, Patrick Troughton. I think that's how mm-hmm. you say his name. Mm-hmm. I was watching one of his, the War Games, stuff. And, it's slower, there's not
sure.
like anything scary at all in like the episode pretty much, and the episode I saw and it,
sure.
And the acting is just really good,
Yeah.
So you get the really good acting, but you get, kind of a slower paced story that builds to yep. eventually, a good
ending. A lot of talking, a lot of dialogue, a lot of exposition, a lot of technical jargon. Which that's another thing that Doctor Who, the classic era, was really known for, was some really classic jargon, reversing the polarity of the neutron flow. That's a common phrase that it gets used in other TV shows. Other science fiction shows have used it. A lot of it's used as a joke in a lot, like I said, like in Simpsons and stuff. People like for a lot of your hardcore science fiction nerds know that line very, very well. Reversing the polarity of the neutron flow. It's endured. It's amazing some of the jargon that's come out of there that has, again, become a permanent part of our pop culture lexicon. But
one thing
to
cap off the legacy is the theme.
the theme
music.
Yeah, with the theremin and that theme is so iconic. Like that's probably one of the top, if it's not in the top 10, it's at least in the top 20 like well known like popular TV show sci-fi themes of all time. Mm-hmm. Because there's no way you could not recognize that. You'd have to be living on like another planet or under a rock or something to not at least hear it and go, hey, I know that from somewhere. Like it's familiar to me. We're gonna go from the classic era into the modern era while we still have a little bit of time left. We got about, I think, like 12 minutes.
Before we do that, may I suggest actually if we hold off on the modern era and do that for the next, next podcast of it, like the next Doctor Who one? And then we can talk all about the modern era and do a bunch of the other stuff. Because I wanted to go into the Twitter stuff real quick to get stuff out there because I want people to interact with us on Twitter. Feel free to add us on HLLYWOOD pod. That's Hollywood pod, but without the O in Hollywood because, Twitter can only give you so much. But Hollywood Pod, so HLLY Wood Pod. Check us out on that. We have a poll every week of whatever the next story is. So starting tonight, there will be a poll for Tim Burton, which will be our next show next week.
Right.
But this week was Doctor Who, obviously, so that's what we're talking about. And we had a good amount of people writing to us about it. So, So, first of all, I want to say out of 8 votes, which is not bad, considering that Doctor Who isn't the, like whatever's trending right now at this particular moment, 22% were for Matt Smith, 22% were for David Tennant as like the best, who's the best Doctor Who.
Right.
22% is for Peter Capaldi, and 24% is for other. And the two comments I got about it, one was from Alfred. I don't know. Does that count? I don't know, but Alfred voted, and both voted for Tom Baker. So apparently Tom Baker is in the running with all the other Whos. So I think that's great.
Well,
go ahead.
It's a fair point, because for the longest time, Tom Baker is basically the David Tennant of the classic Doctor Who. A lot of that has to do with the fact that, again, he was the only doctor that most Americans even knew of. But there's a number of things. It's one, because of the fact that, he was the most globally recognized doctor at the time, thanks to PBS and stuff. Two, he had the longest run of any of the doctors. I think it was 7 years? 7 years as the doctor. The longest run of anybody on the show. And three, because he was so likable, he was funny. He had wit. He was absent-minded. He had all these really amazing qualities that made him a fun doctor to follow around. And it was really hard to kind of follow up on that. I know every doctor after Tom Baker really had a hard time, filling those shoes. So, it doesn't surprise me that Tom Baker is in there. Because, to be honest, Tom Baker for the longest time was my favorite doctor until David Tennant came along. And now I'm torn, because I love both almost equally for different reasons. So it's really hard to choose between the two which one I like more, because I love them both so much, almost for the same reasons too. Because there's very much a lot of Tom Baker in David Tennant's portrayal.
All right. Well, I just want to also say that thanks to Tom Bragg, who also posted. You can see this stuff on our Twitter, who said Tom Baker as well. Thank you so much for writing our comment. Like, that's what we want. We want more people to interact with us. And we will announce your names on here and give you guys shout-outs and everything. So if you want to follow Tom, you can follow him on TF. Bragg, B-R-A-G-G, as well. So thank you so much for that. And each week we're going to plan to do that at the end of the show. So after the 30 minutes is over, we will be doing that so people can hear this in the archive. So give them something to look forward to, I guess, when they come and check this out again. Anyway,
funny you say Hollywood,
big long pause.
You call it the pod, because in The Seeds of Doom, me and my friend Gary kept laughing at the pod. And it was like, did you say the pod? Because the way they were saying pod was just so funny, and we kept laughing about that.
Well, we're almost out of time, almost. But is there anything we've got 7 minutes left. Is there anything we want to talk about real quick?
Well, since we're going to avoid the modern Doctor Who for now.
I mean, you think that's a good idea, right? Just because that would be.
That's fine. With only 7 minutes left, we don't really have a lot of time to talk about it anyway, and there's a lot of material there. We can kind of go back and talk about the early Doctors as well. Because I know, again, Tom Baker is definitely the crowd favorite. But a lot of people really, really dislike the Sixth Doctor, which was
Colin Baker.
Colin Baker, thank
no
you.
Relation.
No relation.
No relation.
Because And a lot of the reasons why people hated Colin Baker was because when he first started, he was such a because all the other doctors, with the exception of Hartnell, was a little bit more of a grumpy grandpa. But all the doctors up until Colin Baker were charming. They had a charm to them. You know, the second doctor was kind of a hobo clown. You know, the third doctor was kind of an adventure karate guy, you know, and so on and so forth. And then all of a sudden Colin Baker showed up and he was just a jerk. Like he was just this arrogant. You know, his first line when he wakes up for regeneration was just this condescending, kind of arrogant, like jerk kind of thing. And so a lot of people didn't like him for the longest time, which I think is unfair because I've seen a few of his episodes and I've learned to love all the doctors for different reasons. I guess the final thought that I want to talk about at this point is just how everybody's got their own doctor. Everybody's got a doctor that they love. Everybody's got a doctor that they hate. But the thing is what makes the show great is its ability to adapt, and it takes that adaptability and translates it into the show as well. So even if, you know, this doctor is not for you, there's something good about every doctor. There's something valuable about every doctor, no matter whether you like them or hate them. And I think that's one of the reasons why the fandom has endured for so long is because there's always, if you don't like this doctor, you're always going to find something to like about the show regardless. Like, you're never going to go, oh my God. I mean, there are people that do just say, oh, I'm not watching the show anymore. I'm done because I hate whatever. But if you really, really, truly love the show, you'll always find something to like about it. Even if you're not a fan of this particular doctor, you know it's going to change. You know it's going to be different. And you know there's always going to be something to like regardless. Alfred, would you like to add any more thoughts to that?
Yeah, I would have to agree because at first I didn't want to watch anything other than Tom Baker. And thanks to my friend Gary, he pushed me into watching some of the other ones. I really became a really huge fan of John Pertwee, so it's between Pertwee, Baker, and Tennant for me.
Right.
And like some of the later doctors, they had some. I wasn't a huge fan, but I think giving them a chance, they got some really good stories. They got some new villains. They got some neat concepts. They got some neat companions and. And I think one of the big things about the later years of what finally destroyed Doctor Who was the producer at the time, I think, took over full. I don't know, John Nathan Turner had a lot of, like, bad press around him. I read a lot about it getting irritated because it canceled the show, but I did, and plus a lot of those. Since I didn't watch a lot of them, I still have some old ones I can watch that I haven't seen before. You know, they're not making any more new old ones, but I think, you know, just what it's had an effect on me. It's like Star Wars and Star Trek. I've watched Doctor Who since I was a kid, and that's one of the legacies for me.
Sure, sure.
And like Jonathan said, it's the 13th show, and there's 13 doctors. I wanted to plug him.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, yes, that is awesome. We are literally almost out of time. We got by like a minute and a half, and so I wanted to go around and do the ending where we tell each other or tell the audience where they can reach us. So, Alfred, starting with you.
I can be reached at the Video Alternative on Facebook or the Video Alternative Part 2 on Facebook. And that's where you can find me. I'll just send a friend request or a join for the site. And
right,
I can also
awesome.
Be reached at alfred.crane@verizon.net.
All right. Awesome. What about you, Donnie?
You can find me on Facebook. You know, same thing. I mean, if you want to message me or friend me, send me a friend request to Donnie Sturges. I also run a webcomic called The Adventures of Baby Skeletor on Facebook, on Instagram, and on Twitter. Just some daily adventures that run three times a week about a little Skeletor baby that gets himself into trouble. And then on Thursdays, I do a kind of like an action figure diorama theater where I not diorama. Backgrounds Yeah, no, I just realized what that sounded like, say, coming really quick out of my mouth. I was like, diorama, which means I set up backgrounds and props and everything, kind of like what Robot Chicken does, only it's not animated. But those are pretty much the main places where you can find me. So.